information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
Thank you, Don Rue, and welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, May 10th, 2023. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and coming up this hour, this is Travel and Tourism Appreciation Week. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and so we will visit with Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers about the economic impact of all the folks who come into Wisconsin to visit and all of us who like to drive around this big, beautiful backyard of ours. So we had a nice conversation yesterday that we're going to play back for you at 7:30. I have to say, I'm usually pretty good about getting these interviews done in one take because you do a lot of live radio, live TV, you like to try to be prepared. It's one of the few times I had to start the interview over when instead of saying tourism secretary, I said transportation secretary. And she had such a look on her face, like, should I correct him or not? And I could see it in her face. So I stopped the tape and I'm like, what? And she's like, you called me transportation secretary. I'm like, oops. So yes, the tourism secretary will be joining us at 7:30. So you want to stick around for that. Todd Alba will be in at 7:50 to talk about what's coming up on his show next on many of these civic media radio stations. And we still want to hear from you about your favorite teacher. You can either call the studio line at any point this week during Teacher Appreciation Week, tell us about a favorite instructor, or record a video selfie or a voice memo on your phone, and then just text message that to us at 844-967-2789. That is always the place where your calls are welcome, or you can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. We were talking in the last hour about the lifting of the COVID emergency, and that's something that will take place tomorrow. And when it does not. There are people who will use it as some kind of cause for celebration, like, oh, no more face mask rules and no more of these other, you know, namby-pamby, you know, safeguard things. It's not really about that because, let's be honest, those things haven't been around for quite some time in most places, and far too many people didn't adhere to them or talk to them down and, frankly, killed people in the process. And there's no way around that. The lifting of the emergency isn't about that so much as it is about a lot of things that were at little or no cost to people, from testing to vaccinations to treatment. Many things are about to go back on to private insurance. And we all know what a wonderful track record private insurance has in this country, don't we? So that should be a lot of fun, especially if we have another resurgence of some kind of COVID variant. Because we haven't done basic things like expand Badger Care to cover more, you know, working families who have lower incomes. I was talking in the last segment about what was in the Up North News newsletter that we put out every morning about COVID. What I didn't share at the time, we had Melissa Kay with us, and I didn't want to be complete Debbie Downer with her, but just the death tolls from each of those years. 3 years ago, at the start of the pandemic, on May 10th, 2020, we were pretty near panic-stricken here in Wisconsin as the death toll had reached 400 people. And we thought about that, like, man, that is like, you know, a jumbo jet or a couple of, you know, airplanes crashing. We would treat this as such a five-alarm emergency with 400 dead. Well, by 2021, the Wisconsin death toll was 6,904. And little did we know, we were on our way to our current COVID death toll in Wisconsin of 14,483. Now, the sad thing about that is the number of people who have tried to minimize that, saying, well, they were old and sick anyway, they were going to die, which I mean, is just repugnant on so many levels that, you know, because it's happening to somebody else who isn't as healthy as you, that somehow that doesn't count. Not to mention dismissing all of the people who were, in fact, in good health, but before the vaccines were readily available, did catch COVID and die. But the story of COVID will be the story of people who did not take it seriously from the Oval Office on down, especially in a lot of business circles, where it was all about putting the economy over human lives, putting profit over people. So that emergency is ending, but it does not mean that we should be any less vigilant about keeping up to date on vaccinations, washing your hands, staying home if you're sick. It's not It's not worth it to get other people at work sick. It's tough enough when people get sick. There is a labor shortage in this country, no more so than in healthcare. And in a brand new story that just came out online about an hour ago from our friend Jessica Van Egren at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, formerly of Up North News, the headline says, "We are in crisis. Nurses and the lieutenant governor call for more budget money to address the healthcare workforce." Governor Evers had put in his budget proposal $45 million for two initiatives designed to retain and train more workers, money to develop a minimum fee scale for home and community-based healthcare services like workers who provide in-home healthcare. But that funding to address the healthcare shortage in Wisconsin, the healthcare labor shortage, was one of more than 500 things stripped by Republicans out of Governor Evers' proposed budget by Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee. And so Sarah Rodriguez, the lieutenant governor, and other healthcare workers held a news conference yesterday at the Capitol, all but begging Republicans to put something in there that addresses the crisis of the labor shortage in healthcare, perhaps felt most acutely here up north. We'll be back. We'll get the forecast from weatherology, a little sports, and more headlines coming up after this break. You're up north. Phone lines are open here at 844-967-2789 about anything that's in the news today. But also, if you want to tell us about your favorite teacher, it's Teacher Appreciation Week, or tell us about your favorite place to go in Wisconsin. Not your backyard, but when you actually hit the road, where do you like to go? We're going to hear from Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers about Travel and Tourism Week coming up in just a bit. This is normally where I'll do a little bit of sports while we wait for Jennifer Vachitsky from Weatherology to join us. She's here now, and the Brewers lost, so we don't have to talk about them right away. I'd rather hear from Jennifer myself. Jennifer, good morning. Let's hear more about the couple of nice days and, you know, where the raindrops are going to be as we head toward another weekend. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I mean, like you said, kind of a few nice days here. We're looking at sunny skies across the board today with highs in the 70s for most as the warm front pushes through the state today. A little cooler towards Lake Michigan, above average for everyone, as most of the state should be in the mid to upper 60s. For Thursday, sunny skies in 80, Madison, Richland Center, and to the southwestern parts of the state tomorrow. Mid to upper 70s for nearly everyone else, lingering around about 70 here around Milwaukee. Cloudy, though, in west central Wisconsin, with a chance for showers and thunderstorms starting to come into the area. Friday, chance for rain for essentially everyone. Slightly cooler compared to Thursday as the cold front begins to push through. Still lingering in the 70s for the western half of the state, Madison up to Wausau and over to Amory. Then in the 60s for the eastern half of the state, Oshkosh down to Waukesha and Milwaukee. And it does look like overall a cooler weekend ahead as that cold front fully pushes through by Sunday, with a chance for showers and storms all weekend for everyone as well.
All right, Jennifer, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too.
All right, Jennifer Wachitsky from Weatherology joining us with a quick update. Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers joins us at 7:30. And again, we'd love to hear about your favorite teacher or your favorite place to travel in Wisconsin at 844-967-2789. We'd love to have your phone calls today and hear what's on your mind. The Brewers lost to the Dodgers last night, 6-2. It was a little unexpected for a couple of reasons. First off, Dodger pitcher Noah Syndergaard only lasted one inning. He almost didn't come out at all because he had a cut on, I believe it was his index finger of his pitching hand. You could see them working on it. He went back into the clubhouse. Then he came back out and he pitched for an inning, but apparently could not keep the cut closed. And so here we'd knock their starting pitcher. Well, we didn't knock him out, but he was out. And our starting pitcher, Eric Lauer, has been masterful against the Dodgers. In his last 11 starts against LA, he'd gone 7-1. But he didn't make it out of the fourth inning last night. He allowed four runs. And again, the Dodgers went on to beat the Brewers 6-2. Lauer had given up a leadoff home run to Mookie Bettis. That really kind of set the stage for things. So they will play again this afternoon. Wade Miley will get the start. Tomorrow's an off day. Then the Kansas City Royals come to town for three games. And Aaron, I don't mean to sound conspiratorial here, but I know that last week we gave away tickets to last night's game on Tuesday. Other people, other shows had given away tickets to Monday's game. I'm not aware that we were given any tickets for this afternoon's game to give away. And so, you know what I'm picturing? I'm picturing right now that Luke Mathers is like loading up all of his tailgating gear, and he's actually going to the game without us this afternoon, that he's using the tickets. Can you check up on him today and see if he's actually playing hooky or something like that?
I can find out. I can let you know.
I can just, I mean, now that we know what an animal, you know, Luke becomes as a tailgater, I mean, that's the guy I want to tailgate with from now on when we go to games.
Definitely. Although if you want to know, that's the fun story, but the truth is that the Civic Media sales team is going today.
Well, that's okay. They're allowed. I you know, what good is it to have tickets if you can't use them for yourself now and then, like we got to do a couple of weeks back. So we love giving them away, but yeah, sometimes we're going to use them too, which means that if you couldn't go to today's game, he said, turning toward a shameless plug, you can listen in two sit pop quiz, Aaron. Where are those two Civic Media stations where you can hear the Brewers?
You can listen to WISS, Oshkosh Air Support, or you can listen to WRCE News from the Center.
Oh, it's like you pay attention. You hang on my every word. I appreciate that so much.
And I know 1100 AM is the Oshkosh one. I can't think of the signal for the other.
Richland Center, it's 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. Would I know that off the top of my head? Oh, hell no.
I probably should.
I've got that here. We mentioned in the last hour, but it's worth mocking again, that the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has put out a press release talking about how teachers overwhelmingly made campaign contributions to Democrats, that it totaled nearly $300,000 over the past couple of election cycles, which sounds like a breathless headline until you understand that just one family, Dick and Liz Eline, gave $6 million just to Dan Kelly in just the Supreme Court election. Not to mention everything that was done in the, you know, races for governor and Senate last year. So I think the folks from Will can stand down on that one and look for something else to expose, shall we say. Donald Trump was found liable for sexual assault, not for rape, but for defamation as well, and must pay Jean Carroll $5 million. This was the first case of sexual misconduct by Trump that was tested before a jury. And I'm not going to lie, I was surprised by this. I have been so conditioned to see Donald Trump, you know, never face consequences for anything. And this was a case from a very long time ago. And so I wouldn't have been a bit surprised if a jury had said, well, we can't really know. It was long ago, you know, not to mention the fact that Trump put on this show of bravado by not only not showing up for a trial where he was accused, but for basically not even putting up any defense. What they were trying to do is send a message to the jury that this case is so flimsy, we're not even going to bother. You guys go in the room for 5 minutes, come on back. You know how weak this case is, and come on back and exonerate our boy. And that is not what they did. They looked at the evidence. They came back and found Trump liable and provided that reward. Now, Trump obviously is going to be appealing that, and he's going to continue to use the case to, you know, gin up anger. It's always about the grievances, and there will be plenty of grievances. He's already talked about the case being, quote, a complete con job and a hoax and a lie. But again, Trump called no witnesses. He never appeared. He's already been admonished by a judge in another case not to talk about any evidence in the case on social media. So this is something that is going to, I think, as we move closer toward that Republican National Convention happening in Milwaukee, there are more than a handful of people that are already telling you that we know what's going to happen. Donald Trump is going to come into Milwaukee. He's going to declare it the greatest city ever, accept the Republican nomination. He's going to take credit for being at the groundbreaking of Foxconn and 13,000 jobs that are coming. Spoiler alert, there's never going to be 13,000 jobs coming to Foxconn. It was a disaster from the beginning. We are very fortunate to have the hundreds of jobs that are there, but it was nothing like what he advertised. But he's going to talk about that anyway. This is how people envision the Milwaukee convention going. And I still tell you, I'm not sure that's going to be the case, because we have had plenty of campaigns in the past, you know, where Rudy Giuliani was all but declared the Republican nominee and Howard Dean was all but declared to be the Democratic nominee. We are a long ways away from the New Hampshire primary. And even though Trump is going to be on CNN tonight talking to New Hampshire voters and a CNN reporter and trying to spin this case however he can, it's also quite clear that as more people see more of these cases come to fruition, the case in Manhattan, the potential case in Georgia, everything about the 2020 election and then the insurrection that followed, every one of these things tells us that we may actually have to overcome that cynicism that I had before this jury award yesterday. And all we can do is monitor these cases and keep you up to date on them. And again, stick to the evidence of the cases as this jury did yesterday. Speaking of elections and Wisconsin, I already know what my first thing is that I'm going to tear into and read later when the show is over here, because anytime I see a new piece of analysis from Craig Gilbert in the Journal Sentinel, it's right away like, I was going to say a kid at Christmas, but it's more like the way my younger daughter was when the Harry Potter books were brand new and fresh, and she'd sit on the front stoop of the house waiting for the UPS driver to come and deliver the next installment in the series. That's how I am with Craig Gilbert articles when he looks at voting trends. And in this new one, he talks about the shifting suburban votes in Wisconsin over the past 30 years. Now, I will say that if I were going to take issue with one thing, is when we talk about Wisconsin's suburban vote, most of the time folks are talking about the Milwaukee suburbs, specifically the WOW counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington. But the suburban vote in Madison can't be underestimated, nor in Green Bay. But where I really know we're not spending nearly enough time is in St. Croix County and talking about the Twin City suburbs in western Wisconsin, which, again, is still a predominantly Republican suburban voting area, but it's changing just as it is in suburbs elsewhere across Wisconsin. And so Craig Gilbert was looking at 30 years of data and trying to figure out if he could provide some takeaways for readers. But he does, you know, note that how different suburbs have gone on different paths entirely over this time. He writes, the Madison suburbs have gone from about 10 points bluer than the rest of the state to 40 points bluer. Washington County, meanwhile, has gone from 25 points redder than the state as a whole to about 40 points redder, which does not surprise me at all as somebody who worked at the radio station in West Bend for a time. Some areas, he writes, like the suburbs of Green Bay and Appleton, haven't changed dramatically in partisan terms, but others have undergone something more like a transformation, he writes. Milwaukee's North Shore leaned Republican in the 1990s. Now it rivals the Madison suburbs for its extreme Democratic margins. In the 1990s, Ozaukee County was the most Republican of the 72 counties, but based on last year's results for governor, it's now the 44th most Republican county. So these are things that, again, they simply tell us where our neighbors are, how they've, some have been voting with their feet, you know, witness the rapid growth in places like Madison and its suburbs, while other communities sadly are emptying out. But it also tells us about how the people in those communities who have stayed are moving further Republican or further Democratic. And so, again, if you don't subscribe to the Journal Sentinel, you should, if for no other reason, to look at what Craig Gilbert is telling us about ourselves, the Wisconsin electorate. All right, coming up next, my conversation with Wisconsin Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers. You set aside the politics, the one thing we all agree on is we love the state and we love to tool around it and spend money. More about that next. You're Up North.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
I'll tell you what, we've just undergone one of the more dramatic commercial breaks in Up North News radio history, where Aaron and I have been scrambling because we had a computer crash situation over here at my end and did not have the Ann Sayers interview quite ready yet here. So what we've had to do is quickly scramble to get it uploaded again. And let's see if, yep, Aaron says he's got it there. So we've got it. Apologies in advance. I think we've got the final take of this. I don't think it's the one where I had to start over because I'd called her transportation secretary. But let's go ahead and play back my interview yesterday with Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers. Back now on Up North News Radio, it is my pleasure to introduce the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, Ann Sayers, who I've known going back to my time as a
tourism.
What did I say?
Transportation.
Oh, God. See, there it is.
I haven't had
there it is. So I'm just going
to
talk.
I'm glad you did.
That's what you get, Aaron, when you play the raw stuff. So I'll tell you what. Are you able, Aaron, to run that up about 2 to 3 minutes?
Oh, that far ahead? Sure.
Yeah, because we just, and I don't say any bad words or anything, but we basically get to the point where I say, what is it about Transportation and Tourism Week? So again, with the entertainment value of a computer crash, let's pick up the interview with Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers a couple of minutes into things here.
I mean, you are right. It's enormous. And I think maybe because it's so much fun that we sometimes forget to stop and recognize the fact that travel and tourism is a significant economic driver in our state. Back in 2021, we were a $20.9 billion industry. It's a huge number. And 169,000 individuals in Wisconsin, our friends and our neighbors, their livelihoods are supported by the tourism industry in one way or another. And, you know, we're looking at those 2022 numbers now. They'll be final here in a couple of weeks. But every indication we have is that 2022 is even better. We are bouncing back and continuing to contribute an awful lot to the state in terms of economic impact. And that's good for every one of us as taxpayers.
You know, and Wisconsin has a pretty rich history in travel and tourism. You know, up in my neck of the woods up here along Highway 29, I remember, several years back now, when they basically tried to restore what was once known as the Yellowstone Trail. It was like one of the original, you know, car routes to get to Yellowstone National Park, cut through this part of Wisconsin. We're one of the first states, I think, that numbered our highways. We get that people want to go places, not just for work, but for leisure.
That's exactly right. I think a big part of it is just something about our nature, who we are as people. We are fun loving. We're quick to laugh. We're friendly. We're down to earth. And I think all of those things play really well into just vacation time and opportunities to connect with one another, friends and family. And we've always taken vacation very seriously here. And as a result, it's turned into big business.
Well, and in so many different, you can really break it down either by folks who are just looking to see some sites, which might be out in the country or might be like a specific venue, like, you know, something in Wisconsin Dells. But then there's also the subsets of like just outdoor recreation. And then you get into hunting and fishing and all of those different ways. How do you, I mean, honestly, when you talk about all that, how do you go about marketing an entire state from a travel and tourism standpoint? Are people pulling you in different directions that say emphasize this versus that? Is it based on market research? How do you even get your arms around how you promote Wisconsin?
It's such a good question. And, you know, A lot of it is fun and games, but it also is science. So we actually turn to the data because I wouldn't even know where to begin without the data. And so we look at what are the main travel motivators. It turns out that for most folks, you're right, outdoor recreation is always in the top two. The other one is major events. And that's another thing I just love about who we are. Like, we have an event for literally everything. Currently, right now on our website, we have 1,450 events listed. So you can find one any day of the week for anything you might be interested in. So we start by looking at that. Who are our target audiences? Who's going to spend the most when they're here? Who's going to travel in the largest party size? Who's going to stay the most nights? And of those folks, what do they want to do? And we'll make sure that we relay the message to them that we have that. We have exactly what everyone in their travel party is looking for, and that all of them are going to go home with a story to tell. And a big part of that is, like, we want to make sure they want to come back, that this becomes something they do for generations. And that's another thing we've been really lucky with here in Wisconsin, is that you meet so many people with these connections to Wisconsin because it's been a part of their family traditions for so long. And that's certainly something we want to continue.
As well, from, say, just an entrepreneurial standpoint, obviously, like you said, there are places that are handed down over generations, but also the things that come and go are people who start up some kind of a business that's related to tourism. I know somebody who's, you know, opening a bait shop up north. They've never been in any kind of a business like this before, but they know what the fishing is like up in that area, and that, you know, they want to be a part of that as part of their, like, their semi-retirement, as it were. For folks that think about, they want to be more involved in the business of tourism, are there resources as well that either work through Travel Wisconsin, or do they go through maybe, you know, one of the other state agencies? Because you obviously want people to succeed if they're going to try to be part of this sector of the economy.
That's such a good point. And it really is one of the joys of being in this position, is getting to meet those folks who are looking at the opportunity, finding a niche that needs to be filled, and figuring out how to do it, and often meeting with great success. It kind of depends which agency is the right one, depending on where folks are in their journey. Certainly, WEDC, the Economic Development Corporation, has a lot of programs and support for helping businesses get off the ground. But then maybe it's something more in the outdoor recreation space, and it's a nonprofit, and they're looking to help connect some trail networks so that businesses can thrive from the trail perspective. Certainly here at the Department of Tourism, what we love to do is, if it's built, we promote it. If it's legal, we'll promote it. So we're here to promote the heck out of all of the offerings that are out there. And a lot of people are really grateful for that, because marketing dollars are hard to come by. Sort of telling the story once you have something cool can be hard to do. And that's exactly what we're here for.
Do you try as well to stay up on whatever trends are coming and going? I think, for example, again, this goes back several years, but there was something called geocaching back when, you know, GPS was still a relatively new thing, and it was almost a high-tech version of scavenger hunts. And certainly other things have come and gone. What kinds of things do you try to stay on top of over these past couple of years at the department?
That's a fun question. You know, for that, we also turn to the data. We are trying to stay in front of all of that. And we're looking at things like, what's the up and coming? We see a lot of interest right now among our target travelers in things like wellness travel, mental health breaks, ways to get kind of escape the everyday grind. I think that might be something that's really peaking coming out of the COVID times. But we're also seeing that folks are looking at car travel. Certainly they're looking just kind of, it's easy, it's fast, it's affordable. So we want to make sure that folks realize that Wisconsin is actually a perfect destination for car travel. And we also are seeing folks just travel with their values on their sleeve. They want to make sure that their destinations are understanding the importance of sustainability. They want to make sure they understand the importance of providing opportunities for people of all abilities. So these are all things that we're watching and making sure that our industry is putting forward, because we have all those things in spades, but we need to make sure that we're matching those opportunities to where the eyeballs are of our potential travelers.
Can you tell me your impression of regional cooperation and marketing? I thought of it when you mentioned the road trips, and for a time I served on this board for the Great River Road, which goes along the Mississippi through all these states, and the way that those towns try to help market themselves as
you know, you don't have to go to the big flashy place. You can take a car trip up and down the Mississippi River to all these great communities. And of course, you've got the Driftless area and things like that. So how strong is the regional sense of cooperation in places around the state?
Mm-hmm. I'm such a big fan of the Great River Road. Yeah, we do. You know, for an international traveler or even for one from one of the coasts, flying into Chicago is not that different than flying into Milwaukee or Madison, and sort of like they'll be willing to travel from there. So we have been working cooperatively with our neighboring states to put the Great Lakes region on the map for those travelers coming from further afield, because we don't feel like they're going to necessarily stay within the state lines of wherever they land. So we want to keep moving that dollar further through the state. So we are in some cooperative programs with the Great Lakes states. Probably first and foremost, there's just something very special about the Great Lakes internationally that we want to make sure everyone understands that we're a part of that. We have two Great Lakes. That's pretty darn special. And we want to get that message out there. But you're right, the Mississippi River is another huge opportunity. Another one we're finding some traction with is Frank Lloyd Wright. You know, a lot of his, we're very fortunate, I think, in Wisconsin. We have some of his the best and most variety of examples of his works. But there's still a lot going on, too, in Illinois. So we're trying to connect that idea that there's a lot more you can see of his works along the way, too.
You know, when you mention the Great Lakes, it reminds me that Governor Evers and other governors around that region are working together in an area of electric vehicle, you know, charging stations, in part to enhance travel among the Great Lakes states. And to me, it almost seems like a high-tech version of the Yellowstone Trail that I mentioned earlier, that for this next generation of EV travel, you have to start someplace with the infrastructure that will entice people to come to the area. It seems like the Great Lakes states are rather forward thinking that way when it comes to, you know, green energy resources.
This is such a great example of the theme of this year's National Travel and Tourism Week is travel forward. And you're right, those EV charging stations are a perfect example of that forward kind of thinking that's going on. We know more than prior to the pandemic, more than 90% of our travelers arrive by personal vehicle. That number has only gone up. And more people, because of what we talked about, traveling with their values in mind, are choosing electric vehicles. So we need to make sure we are actually living up to that value, that we can deliver on promises that we're making. So not only is the governor, along with the other Great Lakes states, making sure that we have that infrastructure in place, here at the Department of Tourism, we've made sure that every business listing that we have on our website, which is many, it's all of them, all the tourism businesses have the ability to advertise whether they have one of those electric vehicle charging stations. So travelers can choose to stop there, spend a little time / money in those communities while they charge up. And that's just one way we're trying to get in front of what we know is coming. It's clearly coming, and it's really exciting development.
And again, all these other subtopics of travel, I thought just when we're about to start working on our annual county fair list, if you are just traveling county fairs, you could hit so many places and see so many different things, and it's broken down in so many other ways. So as we start to wrap things up, Secretary Ann Sayers from the Department of Tourism is here with us this morning. What are you looking forward to in the coming years? Is it that you have any particular challenges, that you have any particular opportunities that you think are going to be moving the needle this year? What's first and foremost when you talk amongst yourselves about what the rest of 2023 is going to look like in Wisconsin?
I think what excites me and gets me out of bed in the morning is the idea that this industry is sustaining. It only has room to grow. It's a non-extractive way to continue to pour money into our local communities, offset our local tax burdens, and make people happy along the way. You know, it's good for businesses. It's good for our own souls. So the more that we get to encourage people to spend those precious vacation days and their hard-earned vacation dollars here in our state, it's good. It's good for them as travelers, and it's good for us as taxpayers. And the idea that we can have nowhere to go but up from here is really an exciting place to be.
As folks know who listened on Monday's show, I didn't know that this was Travel and Tourism Awareness Week or Appreciation Week until I saw a Facebook post from Ann of posting she wanted to celebrate it by marking all the places she's been around Wisconsin. Did she stop at 52 for 52 weeks out of the year? No, it was like 72, 75 photos that she put up there. That had to take a while to put together, though I would imagine that's a labor of love.
exactly right. I kind of realize I wear two hats, you know. I'm helping to run a state agency and set a pace for this important sector of our economy. But in order to do that well, I need to also be out there and meet the people who are actually making it happen and see what their needs are and how we can best deliver for it. And that means I get to see some really cool parts of our state. And yeah, I realized at some point, wow, I have really had an opportunity to literally wear a lot of different hats. Was one thing I noticed. There's a lot of, you know, ATVing, snowmobiling, boating, and also travel in a lot of different vehicles and see a lot of different art and try a lot of different food. And that is just one example. You know, my travels are one example of what any visitor can experience when they're in Wisconsin. So yeah, it was fun to celebrate, and I hope folks are inspired.
But you,
and that again was Secretary Ann Sayers of the Department of Transportation, just a great ambassador, and our apologies for some technical glitches, but I'm glad we got her on. Todd Alba is up next. You're up north.
Now here's your host, DeAndre Toll!
Oh, wait a minute, I did this wrong. I was gonna be promoting tomorrow morning's show. But now Todd Alba's dancing to whatever Aaron put up for music. Aaron, tell us more about this. I feel like I'm looking behind the scenes of the Todd Alba show.
Yeah, pretty much. This is the theme song for What Up With That, a segment hosted by DeAndre Cole is the character's name. But
as portrayed by one Kenan Thompson.
Yes.
For the his birthday boy today. Who is, what did we say, 45 years old today from Saturday Night Live?
45.
And if there's one thing Todd Alba loves, it's singing along to What's Up With That?
Absolutely. Pomp and circumstance, although I was not big on the coronation. That was too much. Even that was too much for Todd.
Too much for Todd. Todd Alba, who speaks of himself in the third person, joins us now from the conveniently named Todd Alba Show.
I worked too long. How are you? Too many hours of the Bob Dole campaign.
That's right. I hope you have a show that is infinitely smoother than what we just went through for the past 20 minutes there. If you could sense flop sweat over the radio, it would be when I realized the computer crash meant we had to quickly reboot and get that interview out.
But the important thing is you recovered. You recovered. The show went on.
More or less did. I'm reminded of that opening scene in the 1986 movie Broadcast News.
Yes, yes.
And what that producer has to go through when the editor edits the videotape at the very last second. She's got to run through all these hallways to get it to the control room, get it in the machine, just as Jack Nicholson as the anchor introduces it.
It's one of my favorite movies. One of my favorite movies. I can't find it on streaming. I can't even find it on DVD anymore. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's why, Pat Kreitlow, I am of a certain age, and that's why I'm a DVD guy, because they can't take those away from me. The streaming comes on and off. But anyway, I thought
the
you guys
are forever. It's also the movie that gave me one of my favorite lines from Holly Hunter as the producer, and the TV executive is trying to chastise her and saying, you know, it must be smart or it must be terrible or no, it must be easy thinking that you know everything. You got that, Aaron?
I can find that, but I was going to say that I was looking for Broadcast News on streaming, and I Googled where to watch Broadcast News movie and found it all over the place.
Way to go, Grandpa.
But to Todd's credit,
it's
not free on anything. Like, it's not included.
What is it?
It's on Amazon Prime.
I'll say I don't have Amazon.
Google Play, YouTube. It's all those things.
Have you heard of YouTube?
YouTube. I have Paramount Plus because I love my Star Trek Picard, and I have Apple TV.
Okay.
And that's like the one it's not on.
YouTube,
the other ones it is.
A good place to go. By the way, I learned yesterday, we're finally going to get the show on YouTube. This is a great tale behind the scenes of a workplace. Mm-hmm. Like any workplace, we've had people come and go. And sometimes you handle transitions well, and sometimes you miss something.
Right.
And in this case, we were looking for login information for certain things and realizing we didn't have the login information, and the now former employee, it was probably in their email account, which has like since been deleted or something. And we weren't even sure which former employee had the login information, and a high-tech fishing expedition ensued, and we were finally able to bring it back from the abyss.
Whoa.
And can finally access our because people would go to a
one of our YouTube pages and go, why is everything there from 2 and 3 years ago? Well, because the door was locked and we couldn't find the key. And we finally figured out which rock the key was hidden under. So,
well, that's fantastic news.
Yes, it was. I was very, very happy about that. Mr. Alba, you've had a busy show. You were even name dropping me on social media last night talking about your show today.
Yeah, well, you're a big deal. And
Well, just ask me. I'll tell you.
Exactly. Yeah. Kreitlow puts up on the screen here, Todd Alba, named after his show, I think.
I believe that was Mr. Zommers who.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was me.
Okay. Yeah, well, we want to promote you because you're going to be on the first part. It's Crossover Wednesday. So you cross over on to our show on the 8 o'clock hour. Trigvi Olson from the senior advisor for the Lincoln Project will be with us. We started a new segment this week, Pat, called Hot Air from the Capitol. And so yes. we pick out these kind of goofy stories. The first one was Tony Kurtz, state representative from Southwest Wisconsin, that wants to encourage, nay I say, require local municipalities of 20,000 or more population, sheriff's departments and police officers, to write more tickets in order to qualify for more state aid. And if they don't meet one of the four matrix, that included also arresting more people is one of the other four matrix. And if they don't do that, they'll lose 15% of their shared revenue costs. So we thought that was kind of hot air from the Capitol.
Is it that they don't know the definition of corrupt, or they just don't care? Right. When they write in things like that have mandatory quotas for law enforcement,
right.
That's the kind of corruption you used to see once upon a time that you thought we'd gotten rid of, but not with this bunch.
But of course, as you know, as a former state legislator, requiring quotas for state law or for any law enforcement is actually against Wisconsin law. But yet, yes. Tony Kurtz and his Republican allies decide to write it into the budget or into the shared revenue formula so that you would have to A, write more tickets, or B, arrest more people. And of course, as you know, Pat, who does that affect of 20,000 populations or more? People of color and also college kids. Who,
oh, of course.
You know.
But again, we have at our state capitol, we have some of the finest support staff at the Legislative Fiscal Bureau 100%. And the Legislative Reference Bureau. They are nationally renowned, and they must bang their head against a wall when they see a bill like that and nobody asked them, hey, by any chance, this thing I want to put in a bill, is it illegal? Because, you know, I shouldn't write that, but they don't care.
There are some of those five support staff in the Ledge Council and Fiscal Bureau who you and I know, who I will not name. There's a reason they enjoy very fine whiskey and very fine wine. And very fine.
It's because of all the hot air from the Capitol.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Yes. Well, there you go.
I don't even want to know how many hours Aaron spent on that, trying to get that produced just so.
So today you also
mentioned, though, Dan Knoedl, the newly elected state senator, election denier, who's now going to chair the Senate Committee on Elections. Brilliant.
Right.
Just brilliant.
We're going to talk about that today. So, yeah, he's the new guy that took over Alberta Darling's place. And they went from nice and semi-reasonable to once in a while wacky, which is as flat out cuckoo birds nuts with Dan Knoedl. He is the fox watching over the election hen house in Wisconsin.
What could possibly go wrong?
What, Pat? So we'll talk about that today. Also talk about the Trumpster found liable. The Republican response across the nation, not good. And then George Santos. Maybe Republicans have had enough of him, as it appears he's going to be indicted today and arrested, turning himself in on criminal charges in New York.
So much to talk about on the Todd Alba Show, coming up on some of these civic media stations. And if it's not on yours, go to civicmedia.us, look under shows, and find it and listen there. Mr. Alba, thank you. Talk to you again shortly.
You're too kind. Thank you, Pat.
All right. And again, a reminder that tomorrow, as I think I was saying before the wheels fell off the bus here, Joe Zepecki, Kristen Lyerly, Cody Groshak on Hometown Health, they will be talking about the environmental health of composting. That'll do it for us. Thanks so much for tuning in on this Wednesday. Enjoy it. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning, 6 a.m.